He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Wednesday. It is the midweek version of the Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, and Barry Kite, our chartered financial analyst. And we got kind of a mixed up market here so far today. It's kind of been all over the map. And right now it's pointing north, okay? The Dow is up 150 points now. After a pretty big trashing yesterday, I think it was down 450 yesterday, the S&P 500 is up now, about 9 points. Okay, that's a quarter of a percent. It also got whacked yesterday, but it's up today. It's at 3830. Meanwhile, over at the NASDAQ, it's up about 33 points right now at 11,207, and the NASDAQ still looks pretty bad. You know, you look at those headline NASDAQ stocks, and the charts just do not look very good. Now, the small caps, I'm showing them down about a percent, so that's why I call it a mixed-up market today. The crude oil markets are very strong today. Apparently, the refineries in the Middle East are running at full capacity, and they can't quite keep up. So crude is up $1.77. That's 1.5%. And crude is at $113.53. So much for that little holiday we had with lower gasoline prices. Gold continues to just go nowhere. I've never seen a chart like that is just so dead in the water. But, you know, dead in the water right now gives you a pretty good relative strength, because with a market that's been going down and something that's been going sideways on a relative basis, it gets higher numbers. Silver is down 12 cents to 2075. Silver does not look good at all. The 10-year is very quiet today, 3.17%, and Bitcoin, in a mighty struggle here, is trying to hold on to 20,000, and it's barely hanging in there, baby. It is down 800, it's down 900 now. There seems to be a run on the Bitcoin bank, and a lot of the dealers are limiting withdrawals, and they're having to get a shot of liquidity in them to be able to handle the withdrawals. Not a good scene for Bitcoin. It's at 20,104. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson and, of course, chartered financial analyst Barry Kite. Let's start with the GDP. Well, let's start with yesterday first.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, yesterday the Dow was down 491. The NASDAQ was down 343. What was the consumer sentiment number? That came in during the show,
I think. It came into it was right around, I think it's 98, 97. I think the key number, though, was the expectations number.
Yes.
Was, you know, I want to say it was, if I pull it up here in a minute, but I want to say it was around 68 or so. 80 is kind of a, you know, 80 or lower is kind of a, you know, a bit of a warning sign. And you know, the expectations were that it was going to be below 80, and it actually came in pretty further than I think it was going to be. It was supposed to be in the 70 something range, and ended up being 68.
It was a disaster.
Yeah,
I mean, the consumer just does not have a lot to be confident about right now. With, I think, gasoline prices probably are at the top of most people's list.
And
as food, the thing that's,
man, I went to the grocery store yesterday to buy. I was buying getting some cereal for the boys, and I'm like, look at the cereal prices. Like, even the cereal you don't want to buy, right? Even the stuff that's good for you is like $6. You
know? I have not priced Fruit Loops lately. But I like how they make my milk kind of pink, you know, yeah, when I soak my Fruit Loops in them.
Get $6 ready. That or a gallon of gas. A box of cereal or gas. Pick one.
And, of course, General Mills is having a good day. Kellogg's has been having a good year. They're going to break up into three companies. So we had just a terrible report yesterday, okay? And the NASDAQ fell 3%. The Dow got hammered. However, the crude oil stocks, okay? So the pattern for the better part of the year has been the indexes down and the oil stocks up. And then we had about a two-week run, maybe a week and a half, where it was just the opposite, where you had this big rally in the stock market and the left behind the oil stocks. And now everything's turned around again, and we're back to the pattern that has been the predominant pattern this year, with a down market and upwards movement. And yesterday, you know, we had a good day yesterday, even though the markets got trashed between our inverse funds and our crude oil holdings. We did well. I read that Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates are saying, hey, we're at capacity limits. So there is no way to ramp it up. And so John Kilduff of Bloomberg said, it's hard to see any meaningful price relief for crude, noting we're going to have another chunk of demand for crude oil as China relaxes its COVID-19 restrictions. Okay, that's something we're forgetting about. That's a lot of people that were locked down. I don't think they're all driving electric cars yet, so you've got Chinese demand returning to the market. You got the big 4th of July, and I read that we also had a drawdown in our stocks, oil stocks here in the U.S. So that's been bullish again for crude. Yes, there's plenty of analysts out there that think it's going lower, but I think at least it's got pretty good staying power where it's at now, you know, over $100 per barrel. I don't see any relief in sight myself unless we have a big another wave of COVID. Now, I talked to somebody here recently. She came down with COVID last week. I talked to her father, actually. It was gone. I mean, in 3 days, 4 days, she's all better, okay? So I don't think, even if we do have a wave of COVID, unless it morphs into something else, it's not nearly as debilitating as the first wave of COVID was. The people I've talked to have kind of reported to me a bad cold. So anyways, that's the story on the oil markets. We had a lot of readers of our article yesterday, a lot of comments on that article. I think they were all positive comments, people agreeing with us. Today, Raymond James says that the recent rally in the market was only a dead cat bounce. It needs to be a song. I know we had cat scratch fever. I think I'm going to record Dead Cat Bounce Blues out of Memphis. The recent rally, only a dead cat bounce. And here's what they say, and this was one of my thesis, was that the corporate earnings are likely to drag the market lower. I am usually very optimistic as we approach earnings season. But you know what? I've learned you can't be an eternal optimist. Sometimes you have to face up to reality. You can't be a perma-bear. You can't be a perma-bull. I'm expecting a pretty weak earnings season. Now, tomorrow is the close of the second quarter of 2022. It's all over. And so not only will we get the earnings reports, we will also get the expectations and guidance going forward. And Raymond James thinks there's more downside to the market, and they think there's downside risk to the earnings. And, of course, it was the day before, it was Morgan Stanley, I think, yesterday, that lowered their target price to $4,200 on the S&P 500. Okay, now, here's the big GDP number. This is, I think, the final number.
Yeah, this is the final. They've counted everything. I think this is the third and final revision.
And it went down again.
Yep, minus 1.6% ended up being the final number. So
yeah, that and 1.4 was the consensus. The PCE price index comes in final count 7.1. That's the that's one of the inflation indexes. The core PCE 5.2. Real disposable personal income fell by 7.8%. That's a big drop, and that kind of coincides with that weak consumer sentiment number that we got yesterday. Well, okay, recession talk. There seems to be a lot of it going around. Is it just a bunch of rumors, or do we see something out there on the horizon that doesn't look good in the U.S. economy? But what sectors do look good still at this point in time? There's still plenty. This is Bill Gunnarsson and Barry Kite. We'll be right back. Back here to the second quarter of the Best Stocks Now show. Well, one of the areas we have picked on with inverse funds, the small cap, the Russell 2000 in particular, where it's, you know what, the Russell 2000's got a lot of junk in it. If you go through those 2000 stocks, you're going to find about 100 if you're lucky. You know, that are decent stocks, and the rest, you know, just subpar. And I think that's one area. And I see that those ETFs are doing very well today. The oil stocks are selling off a little bit today. And tech is starting to go south once again. Tech looks awful right now. All right, well, more good news here. Bed Bath & Beyond tumbles. I don't know how they survive. I really don't. That has been a they're the last one standing out of all the linens and things and some of the others in the past of home goods. Bed Bath & Beyond, Barry, is down 21% today.
It's kind of like the coupon. It's like, you know, when you get that 20% off coupon.
Yeah, well, it's going the wrong.
Right.
It's a $5 stock now. I don't know that it's going to survive. They may, you know, and I still don't see how these retail REITs, the REITs look very vulnerable, and they continue to slide too with, you know, the office building REITs with people not going back to work. Yet, you know, the REIT articles continue to always be at the top of the leaderboard. In seeking alpha and anything dividend
and yeah, anything with income and the REITs certainly I guess fit that bill. It doesn't you know, the problem is you know, you pointed out, you know, take like an Altria or Philip Morris recently, you know, talking about, you know, chasing yield and then what the actual stock price in terms of a total return has done. It's you know, it's pretty alarming.
It's absolutely stupid thinking. Well, it pays a 4% dividend. It's down 25% so far this year. You know, what's your total return, pal? That makes no sense to buy these big dividends. Well, I'm still getting my dividend, but your principal is going to heck. That doesn't make any sense to me. And yet, you know, every day, like I say, the top articles on Seeking Alpha are retire rich with this dividend payer. You know what? Number one, I don't have any respect for the writers. It's almost like you're preying on a bunch of suckers by making claims like that, that you can get rich by buying a company with a bunch of companies with big dividend yields while the principal is collapsing. I don't know how anybody can do that, but they do it, and they have plenty of followers that follow them right down the hill. Bed Bath & Beyond, $5 stock. Okay, now here's, I'm continuing to see alarming statements being made by big Wall Street or European banks. UBS slashes the estimates on e-commerce names as recession risk rise. Now, the R word is coming up on a daily basis, more and more and more and more. Okay. Now, e-commerce. You're talking Amazon and Shopify and Wayfair and all the rest of the e-commerce names here. And if they're lowering the estimates on those stocks, what else are they lowering the estimates on? Which was another big point on the article that I wrote. The estimates for next year and probably this year are still too high. The analyst estimates are still too high. I'm usually higher than the consensus estimate, and I've been right over the last several years. Eventually, the market caught up with my estimates, and so did the analyst. But once again, that consensus estimate is a lagger because it takes time for all these analysts to lower their estimates to bring the consensus down, to bring the averages down. But they're starting, just as I predicted would happen, you're going to start seeing analysts lower estimates on individual companies within the S&P 500, and that's going to bring down the estimate for the entire S&P 500. And, you know, Amazon's a good chunk of the S&P 500. I don't know what per weighting it has in there, but a big one. And when you lower the estimates on Amazon, that's going to bring down the S&P. But it's a trend. Okay, that's what I'm worried about. It's a trend of estimates going south for the first time, probably in the last 10 years. Okay, here's another one. Tesla. Tesla estimates trimmed at Citi as Wall Street continues to temper targets. Well, you know what? There's another one that gets downgrades from the analyst. It's a big player. Last time I looked, wasn't it $2 trillion or something like that? Let's see where it is these days. Market cap on Tesla. No, it's under a trillion. It never got up to $2 trillion. It's down to $700 billion.
Yeah.
It's no, well, was it $2
trillion? It hit $1 trillion. Yeah, it hit the trillion mark. We throw those around nowadays.
Closing in on $2 trillion because this stock has been cut in half, and it's at $700 billion. So it got up to $1.5 trillion, and now you're starting to see its estimates coming down. All right, here's a worldwide energy consumption report by BP. And here's what stood out to me. Okay, fossil fuels this year will account for 82% of, or last year, 82% of primary energy. 5 years ago, it was 85%. So we've only cut it from 85 to 82. I mean, that's a drop in the bucket, really. I mean, to get to any kind of significant decrease in fossil fuels, the problem is, and we've said this before, automobiles, you know, is just one part of the fossil fuel usage. How are you going to convert these, the military, the shipping, the railroads, trucking? There's a chance there. But, you know, the
airlines,
world still, airlines, the world still runs on fossil fuels. And in the meantime, coal consumption has risen by 6% during that time. Natural gas has risen by 5.3%. So it's like, and we're getting tighter and tighter supplies of the fossil fuels. So we're kind of reaching a point where, you know, something's got to give. In fact, carbon emissions have risen every year since the Paris goals were agreed on in 2020. I did see that Europe, the EU, endorses a push to end all internal combustion engines by 2035. Well, that's 12 years, 13 years out. That came after 16 hours of negotiations, and that's the year they arrived at, 2035, to be all EV. And, of course, the supply chain is a big, big problem in the EV system. Okay, when we come back, We've got actually a lot to talk about on individual stocks. This is Bill Gunderson and Barry Kite. We'll be right back. Here to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show. My question for Barry is, how much cereal did you buy yesterday? Have you seen General Mills today, GIS? Look at that chart. Huh? That's the chart of the day. They manufacture cereals, specialty foods, yogurt, dough mixes, and snacks for the retail market. Wow.
Up $5, yeah. I mean, up 5%, I mean, wow.
That's a nice move. Relative strength of 94. Boy, how times have changed. General Mills, I mean, a couple years ago, nobody would have wanted this stock at all. Now, all of a sudden, General Mills is in play. Okay,
yeah,
now
here's... like an all-time high, by the way.
Yeah,
when,
I mean,
when
that's...
when I'm looking at the charts, and all, it's at an all-time high today.
That's how the chart of AMD used to look like. Look at the chart of AMD today. It's horrible. I don't know, man.
Yeah, chip makers, they took a took a hit yesterday, which was surprising because of the fact that you had Taiwan Semi come out and actually say that they're raising prices right at the end of the, you know, starting for 2023, cuz so they show that, you know, obviously we know there's a big demand and supply mismatch there, and they're able to kind of pass those costs on to onto their customers. So you would think it would be a different story. But, yeah, it's all of tech is, you know, it's a wishy-washy market when you're
really
you're
bad. I think they're pricing in. I think they're worried about a global slowdown. That's what I see. And, you know, the way to play the semiconductors right now seems to be SOXS, S-O-X-S. Which is starting to really take off. It's up 7.3% today. It's three times inverse, the semiconductor index. That has a relative strength of 98, while AMD has a relative strength of 27. So, wow, crazy here.
Yeah, fundamentals look great on AMD at a PE of 18, forward PE of 18.3. But, yeah, chart gives you a different story.
Okay, here's one of the issues we have, and we've talked about this many, many times. Okay, so we want to go to EV, electric vehicles. That means lithium and lots of it. Okay, Albemarle, which is out of North Carolina, they're probably one of the biggest lithium producers, probably the biggest in the United States. Here's what their CEO said yesterday. He said that the U.S. must cut red tape to boost lithium supply chain. Okay? He said the only way for the U.S. to have a chance of catching up to China, South Korea, and Japan is to make it easier to build a domestic supply chain and have the government clear the way to make sure that happens quickly. He said, the Biden administration added battery metals, including lithium, to the list of items covered by the 1950 Defense Production Act, which could help mining companies access funds. Okay, so money's not the issue. They got plenty of money. But the CEO of Albemarle notes the move included no action to streamline the permitting process. And that, you know, that's the same argument the oil companies have been making. On the one hand, you want us to increase, you know, getting oil out of the ground, but the permitting process and the red tape is horrible. Here's the president of Albemarle goes on to say, it's hard to have your cake and eat it too. Norris said of the Biden administration's efforts to strike a balance between creating a supply chain, domestic supply chain, to enable a more sustainable form of energy with environmental concerns. If we want to rid the world of CO2, ozone depletion, we want to have electric vehicles to enable that to happen. And we want to have a supply chain that is not dependent on foreign countries. So are we making the same mistake we made with oil, depending on all that foreign oil, for our gasoline supplies? And now, you know, the mining is going a lot faster in other countries than it is in the U.S. because at least what Albemarle, he should know, the CEO, they're the biggest lithium producer in America. They can't get the permitting process streamlined so that they can dig for the lithium. In the meantime, Ford goes to Australia. Ford inked a 5-year deal with an Australian miner, Liontown Resources, to secure 150,000 dry metric tons of... Doesn't all that lithium have to be shipped, Barry, to America from Australia?
It's got to hit here somehow.
On ships that aren't running on lithium. There's a lot of paradoxes here. There's a lot of, just strange things. The lithium mine will be sourced from Liontown's flat... Now, getting lithium out of the ground, I got to read it. There was an article on Seeking Alpha the other day that was making the argument that EVs, in the long run, when you add up all of the mining and everything that's got to take place, put about as much carbon into the air as the combustion engines are now. Think of all the tractors and the earth movers and trucks to move the lithium to where it's to the shipping, and it's put on ships with cranes and big lifts and whatnot, and then it's shipped, and then it's put on trucks again, right when it arrives here.
Right.
It's kind of a big trade-off there that may work out about even. We may be better off just staying with what we got. I know that's a terrible thing to say, but I don't know. Somebody needs to do the math on that. Apple slips, even as Wedbush says iPhone demand. Let's check in on Apple today. You know, nothing is sacred right now. Apple's up today. All right, it's up 2%. There's one bucking the trend in the tech industry. More news for Equinor. Now, last time I looked this morning, Equinor was up. Equinor is up still. Ah, now it's flat. Doggone it. They are going to build a 620-mile pipeline to transport carbon dioxide. This is what we talked about yesterday. They're going to store this carbon dioxide underneath the North Sea. Now, like I say, I hope we've done all the studies on, is this part of that bottomless pit that opens up in the last days? Will it be carbon dioxide? I don't know. Anyways, Equinor is very well positioned for high European natural gas prices, and shares are priced at just 2x free cash flow, says Michael Wiggins de Oliveira. How come they don't quote our article?
Right, yeah.
Says Barry Kite of Gunderson Capital Management. Instead, they quote Michael Wiggins de Oliveira in a bullish analysis posted recently on Seeking Alpha. Okay, so there's another one out there. There's not a lot of writers on Equinor.
Well, yeah, and they're just unique because, like you said, I mean, they're in some of the carbon capture. I mean, they've obviously, in that liquefied natural gas. They're geographically, right, located to mainland Europe, right, in terms of their gas needs. And also they do, they do wind projects, they do solar projects, so they're kind of, they're kind of on the, cutting edge in terms of a blended energy play.
Yeah, and there was a lot of people that came out, pretty vehemently against us on that article, talking about the tax rate that Equinor pays. Someone claimed that they pay a 97% tax rate, which isn't true.
Yeah, no.
But there was a lot of people, really, they're the big player over there in Europe, along with Repsol out of Spain, Total Energy out of France. There's an Italian one, Enispa, which symbol E. I think those European players, and now you got a new player, a new shooter out of Israel. And Egypt in a combined effort to provide the EU with natural gas from their newly found fields. That has caught Europe's eye, and they've been in negotiations with Israel to provide natural gas to them. Okay, here's one more before we go to break. This just keeps coming up here. Goldman Sachs is upgraded to a buy. Okay, that all sounds good. By the way, Goldman Sachs stock has tanked recently. It's Bank of America that's upgrading Goldman Sachs. But when you listen to the reason they're upgrading them, it says on their ability to weather a worsening economy. That's all I can say, you know, is as I look at USB, Citigroup, yesterday, Morgan Stanley, there seems to be a real trend. And that real trend is they're bracing for a worsening economy. And, of course, we're probably in one now. In fact, a lot of people think we could be in a recession right now. All right, on that happy note, we'll have some stocks that are popping when we come back. This is Bill Gutterson and Barry Kite. It's the Best Stocks Now show.
You gotta go where you wanna go.
And welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. I got to dig a little deeper here today to find some things that are popping. It's not a very good day, especially the Russell 2K. It's down 1.2% right now. That's the small cap index. The 10-year yield down 5 basis points, maybe a little bit of a flight to safety. I don't think they like that GDP report today coming. To me, that raises the red flag that we're going to get two in a row.
Well, yeah, and if I've looked at some, you know, some import numbers, right, that, you know, that are going to play into this next GDP number, and those aren't good either.
No.
You know, the more, you know, we had that record trade deficit, you know, last,
yes,
you know, last in the first quarter, you know, led to a lot of that negative GDP number. And like I said, from what we're seeing in terms of the dollar still being, you know, pretty, very strong relatively, and some of these import reports that I've seen, we're certainly going to have a large trade. I would imagine we have a large trade deficit again. So
yes, and that's gonna make it hard for a positive GDP report to come in. So, all right, well, the chart of the day for me, other than General Mills, which we don't own. Barry just has some shares in his pantry.
In my pantry, right.
But anyways, you know, I warned about the what do you call it, the SPACs a long time ago, and somebody came up with an inverse SPAC ETF, which I bought into. I thought, how can that miss? These SPACs are just going to all, one by one, go nowhere or get clobbered. There's only a few winners in that entire SPAC space, and now they're not even doing SPACs anymore. It's kind of a dying breed. So my SPAC inverse ETF is breaking out today to a new all-time high. We own it in our emerging growth portfolio. I'd probably own it in the ultra growth too, but it just doesn't trade a lot of shares. It's pretty it's traded 6,000 shares so far today. The symbol is SOGU. Sogoo. I think the SPACs are run by Mr. Magoo. You'd be hardly too young to remember Mr. Magoo, but that was a cartoon of a guy who did everything wrong, basically. And I thought those CEOs bringing those SPACs, of course, they were pretty smart. They walked away with the money.
They definitely walked away with the money.
And the investors that gave them the money kind of left holding the bag. They're the Mr. Magoos in this. And now you've got Sogoo hitting a new 52-week high. Today, it's up 4.3%. That's in our emerging growth portfolio, where we own about 20 positions. That portfolio up, it's just slightly down on the year, you know, with the NASDAQ being down about 25% and the S&P being down about 20%. The emerging growth portfolio, it's been up as much as 10 to 15% this year at different points in time. And we do have quite a few inverse ETFs in there, with SoGoo being one of them, one of our biggest positions in that particular portfolio. There's your chart of the day, relative strength 99. You're seeing all of these 90s and above in a lot of the inverse funds. What can I say? This is one of the few shows that goes there into the inverse fund space. And, you know, I learned about inverse funds many, many, many years ago, started using them from time to time when needed, as necessary. It's like a wound, you know, and it says apply when necessary. And there's just times when you have to. It's your only defense. Your only other defense is to go to cash. But, you know, if you've watched some of the, was it the movie The Big Short? Who was it that made all the money when he saw the mortgage crash coming? And,
Right. No, I don't remember his name.
So there are ways, you know.
He had to figure out how to bet against it.
Yeah, he had to figure out, and they had to create an instrument for him.
Right.
But there's these inverse ETFs. Let's see how many are in my list. I think I have them all, as far as I know. The inverse ETFs, I think there's about 75 or so. Let's see, 68. And some are leveraged. Some are very illiquid. They don't trade a lot of shares. Some are heavily traded, heavily, especially the big index ones on the NASDAQ and on the S&P and on the Dow. So goo. Okay, now, you may not know it, but there's an ETF on this whole carbon capture thing and carbon credits. Now, I'm not quite sure the math, how the math works on that, but they trade those things, those carbon credits. And Crane Shares, which goes into some kind of exotic ETFs. I know they have, for instance, Crane Shares has the Chinese internet companies, KWeb. They have KEUA, which we own in our Best Funds Now portfolio, which is the Carbon EUA Index. And with all of this talk on carbon, that little ETF has done pretty good. It broke out yesterday, and there's three others that they have. I don't have them. I can't think of their symbols right now, but you can go to craneshares.com, and I'm going to go there right now and look those up. But they have created ETFs that trade carbon, which seems to be the hot product right now. Okay, so they have China Healthcare. I'm not interested in that. They have the Hang Seng. Where's the carbon? Well, I can't find them right now, but there they are. Okay. When you can go to craneshares.com and read all about the carbon markets and how they're traded. KRBN is one of their other ETFs. KRBN. Let's just look at that one real quick.
Yeah, and those carbon offsets are needed. You know, you get, you know, these ESG, with focus on ESG, right? I mean, some of these companies, you know, essentially buy carbon credits to offset some of the actual carbon that they're using in their everyday business. So
yeah, and I think people are just starting to discover these carbon offset ETFs from Crane Shares. So anyways, Crane Shares did not pay me for that commercial announcement. Just bringing it to your attention. It's in my database, and it's popping. It has been popping recently. Well, we only got to two. I had a couple others. You'll have to wait till tomorrow. In the meantime, get the newsletter. We've been dead on recently with our market calls. Go to GundersonCapital.com, GundersonCapital.com. And if nobody's doing nothing with your portfolio, get somebody doing something. Give us a call at 855-611-BEST. 855-611-BEST. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Ameritrade.
Ameritrade is a member of SIPC and FINRA.